Speaker for the first talk of day three of this debug is Julia Westberg, and here you go.
Thank you very much. So good morning, everyone. I hope everyone has at least had a bit of coffee and maybe some tea, so we can start with our talk about RACO, how to reboot agriculture. So I'm actually sitting on the Swedish countryside. It's surprisingly sunny this morning. No one would have expected that. And I was thinking we can talk a bit about agriculture and what we can do with that. So the thing is that, I'm sorry, we are there. We should be. RACO is says reell konsumtion på svenska, or reell consumption in English. And it is actually a movement that started in Finland originally, but that by now is has kind of spread all over Scandinavia. And it's a grassroots movement. So it's basically founded by the people, for the people, and organized by the people. So think about that. You want to go to the supermarket and you kind of want to buy, let's say, a bunch of tomatoes. And normally it's quite hard to know where are the tomatoes from, what has been done to my tomatoes, how far have they been transported. And RACO just really cuts out the middleman. So RACO is your neighbor that grows the tomatoes. It's like, hi, you want to buy tomatoes from me? You're like, oh yeah, that would be great. Let's buy tomatoes. One of the things with this kind of markets is I think you maybe know that from the places where you live, where you have farmers markets. Farmers markets are quite a restricted thing because there's rules and regulations, and it's not really, not everyone can participate. You need to actually be a professional farmer. The cool thing with RACO is that it's people meeting and exchanging goods, but the actually selling part has happened before over the internet. And since it's quite hard to regulate a bunch of people that just meet up and exchange resources. So you kind of, at least for Scandinavia, we have found a way to be outside of those regulations, while on the other side, through group control, being able to keep a very good and high standard, both on quality, but also like the ecological side of things and transportation and all of those. So this is like the general movement. Then, since it's a grassroots movement, there is like no bigger organization. It's basically when people think, oh, I want to start one of those rings, then they can just do that and try it. And this is what I did 2019 in a small town called Hörby in the south of Sweden. So a bit about Hörby. Hörby is a small town on the countryside in Sweden. So we're talking like 50,000 people max, let's say low income, education, it's not that great. Conservative structures, yes, very much. I don't think I need to say how people are mostly voting here neither. So it's not really a place where you would expect sustainable change. Since 2021, we have come to 2,500 members in this ring, and that is actually really cool. So how did we do that? With communication. And then you get all these really nice things as a sustainable catalyst, where you have people actually being able to try, because you don't need to be a professional farmer to be part of a RACO group. So if you just grow tomatoes and you have 20 tomatoes too much, you can actually put up your 20 tomatoes for sale and try, is this actually something that I would like? Over this RACO group, you can see what are the demands, what do people want, what do people like. So, and then apparently we are a bit running out of time already. So this is just showing actually the progress of when you keep on going and you people start to talk about and you start spreading things over social media, how you can get from a quite small group to a quite big group with over 25 people producing the food and over 2,000 people being able to buy the food. So what kind of challenges do we have? We have a problem of accessibility. The thing is, in Sweden, these groups are organized over Facebook groups. I don't think here I need to tell you why that is a problem. I would really love hearing different, like, how could we solve that? I will just say why we actually choose Facebook, because we want everyone to be able to participate, mainly also older people living on the countryside, that basically the smartphone, they have started to be okay with that, but so much more, that's hard. So this really, like, it is very difficult to find a good balance between, okay, how much, how far can we push things there? The same goes for payment methods. In Scandinavia, we have quite easy solutions for that. But I know, for example, in Germany, that's not as easy. You need to have a good location. It needs to be big enough so that actually you can all meet up there. Corona doesn't make that any easier. Now you need to have even more space. And you need to get you need to get the movement going. So you need to kind of push through a few months, maybe even a year, until there's people that heard of it and until the talk is around. But then it gets once it rolls, it's kind of does that fairly automatic. Also, you need to keep the transport efficient. So just because it's small scale produced doesn't mean necessarily that on a transportation level, it's more energy efficient. So the bigger the ring gets, the more people are coming. You maybe need to find ways to ensure that. So, so what I kind of want to just a bit maybe help inspire is, like, think about, start more of those rings. Try to get the idea a bit outside of Scandinavia, because it's really cool. And it's generally quite easy thing to do. Choose a communication platform. Think about, maybe find something better than Facebook. Look at the local laws and regulations. How can you get around that? There should be a way to get around that. And then find people that grow tomatoes, cucumbers, maybe someone that has some chickens, or some milk farmer that is really tired of just being screwed for the prices of the milk. And of course, the more products you have and the more producers, the more people will actually come and buy their food at those small scale markets, basically. So yeah, that was that. I realized that was very little time for a quite interesting topic, but if anyone has questions, I think we will take these after the talk. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That was really interesting. It's a quite radical approach to buying local, actually. So I'm totally in. We do not have yet any questions in the pad. So for the people who are already watching the stream in the morning, please hop over to the questions pad. You find the link in the schedule. I have a question. Did you have a look into solutions like Mobilizon or something additionally to Facebook to organize the groups and the events?
Yeah, there is actually an app developed called Local Food Notch at the moment, where we kind of have hopes that it's going to be maybe not a replacement, but that it can help on the way. They have been doing quite some beta tests, and I hope that maybe by then next year we can start to implement it. The problem is that Local Food Notch works a bit more like an online store, so you would need to have people putting up the products on both sides. And that is kind of something that we would like to avoid. I think it depends then also a bit of where is your market located. If you're actually close to one of the big cities with a younger crowd that you want to attract, I think there it's a lot easier. On the more rural areas, countryside, maybe we have talked about if we should just also have it actually on paper, that we put up a paper somewhere and people can just write up there orders. We'll see.
Okay, so this is this also answers my next question for the people or your audience that you're trying to reach, or the people to engage. You have more older people or more younger people, or is it completely mixed?
It's quite mixed, but I would say it depends quite much on the location. If you're like in Hörby on the countryside, it's a lot of older people. And there, for me, that is actually also the kind of group I want to attract, because the youngers have kind of learned about like ecological food and being a bit more aware. But the older generation still just goes to the supermarket and buys their bacon that's produced in Denmark without really thinking about it. And that is one of the nice things with Reiko, that you build a connection with the person producing your food. And that can really change your approach on food completely. So it depends quite a lot on the location. If we talk about, for example, Stockholm, there the age is a lot younger. I think there may be an average, we are around 30 to 40. And I would say in my ring, it's the average is more 50 to 60.
We got questions in the pad. Maybe that one is quite fitting. What about analog communications like posters, flyers, probably newspapers and so on?
We have done quite some analog communication. It's a bit of a challenge since the people organizing it are often producers or customers as well. So there's not really a budget for actually marketing. But we got a hold on quite some nice prints that we were able to print small scale wise. And then it's about this getting this ball to roll. After a while, we actually had the local newspapers were like, oh, I've heard that you're standing there sometimes giving out food. So what is that? Can we come? And if you actually get that kind of audience, that is really amazing. Before we had that, and with kind of no budget existing with analog communication, what I did is basically I took my bike and then I just drove around to a lot of small farms and was like, hi, have you heard about this thing? It's called Reiko. And do you want to sell your products? And talk to everyone that did not want to hear about it. But that helped a lot.
Another question we got is, how do people set their prices? Is there guidance for that?
There is no guidance, but since you have a group of producers and everyone can see each other's prices, it's quite self-regulating, actually. We encourage, as the administrators normally have an eye on that, so we kind of encourage people to take good prices. Like even if you just have 20 eggs to sell, you can't go, it's really not good if you go with your prices below the person that actually is making a living out of that. So there's a lot of self-regulation about that and trying to keep things kind of level and equal. But so far that has been working out quite well. And with producers and Reiko rings, often they're not only producing for one ring, but for a few in an area of, let's say, 50 to 100 kilometers in Sweden, at least. So then they actually also talk to each other and to the other rings. And if someone then realizes, oh, but this person sells their eggs way too cheap, they actually will kind of be someone asking them, hey, could you think about the pricing of your eggs? It's really a problem for us. So for that has been working out really good. And on the other side, if you cut out the middleman, you're able to provide a lot better prices for for the quality that you get.
Okay. How do you deal with misharvests versus promises?
It's not as much of a problem because if we compare it, for example, to the German, where you're part of a farmer of a farm, basically you buy a share of a farm, solidarische Landwirtschaft, I think you call it. There you kind of promise what you're going to deliver. With Reiko, you just put up each week, you kind of have a look, what can I sell this week, and then you just sell that. So if there's misharvest, too bad for the customer, but then that year there's not going to be that many tomatoes. And that means that also if you actually get too much of something, you can just put it up and be like, okay, I have a shit ton of tomatoes, here you go. So for most people, it actually has turned out that Reiko Ring is a very good buffer. Some of them that are a bit further on the journey of being full-time farmers, for example, they have some restaurants that they have contracts with. But after the things they have sold to the restaurant are gone, they're still like, oh God, so much resources. What should I do with that? And then they sell that on Reiko.
I think we have time for one more question. Have you thought about linking it to food waste avoidance, as in getting shops and supermarkets to donate leftover food to give away or redistribute? Dear.
I have thought about that, especially since food sharing is sadly in Sweden not at all very common. But the thing with donating food gets you in a legally different spot. And that is something that we haven't really figured out a good way to work around. It would need to be very under the radar, because we are not allowed to sell food at the spot where we're meeting, because then we would be a farmer's market, unlike an official farmer's market. And then we would need to follow the regulations for official farmer's marketing. So if I'm giving away food, that is very, very on the edge. So far, we sadly haven't really figured out a good way to integrate food waste in a bigger area. I'm hoping that through awareness, we're actually getting somewhere, that the better relationship people get with their food and with the producers, the more they actually will value food, and the less food waste they will produce, hopefully.
Okay. There's another question for the price in the pub, but I think it was already answered. So for the people who ask it, just watch in the real life. We're unfortunately out of time. It was really interesting. Thank you very much, Julia. I hope we'll have another talk about the topic at one of the next CAUS events. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.